The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, I'm Ed Morrissey, in for Hugh. We'll look at the Supreme Court term that ended in June.
I can summarize it in one word, it's astonishing.
Veteran attorney Randy Barnett gives his sense of the most important cases.
School choice could end up being the most important case from a policy standpoint.
We'll look at the key takeaway from the EPA case.
We don't want our bureaucrats with unlimited power.
We'll look at the very clear agenda of the hard left, who now control the Democratic Party.
The left is leveraging everything possible in order to destroy the America that we know and replace it with this neo-communist model.
And the country at large pushing back against this leftward push.
These voters moved under enormous pressure.
I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Hugh this week. Great to be with you. You can find my podcast over at HotAir.com, along with the latest breaking news and analysis, and follow me on Twitter, at Ed Morrissey. And follow this program as well, at Town Hall Review. We'll begin with the Supreme Court, and a look back at this term that was remarkable. Anyone who has questioned the efforts of the conservatives to focus on the judiciary in recent years should be quiet now. The long, hard work of finding originalist judges and getting them nominated and confirmed has paid off. The Dobbs decision, of course, has been getting the most attention. But the other key cases this term have together created a sort of constitutional reset. Hugh Hewitt turned to veteran legal scholar Randy Barnett of Georgetown Law.
Would you summarize the term?
Astonishing. I can summarize it in one word. It's astonishing. Let me put it this way, Hugh. One of the things that was said for some time, especially after the NFIB versus Sebelius Obamacare debacle that I was involved in, as you know, is that five votes are not enough. You need to have six. It goes to 11. You need one more. So it's like you or Ocean's 11. You need one more.
Yep.
So you need six, not five. Six changes the complexion of the court a lot. By six, I mean six legal conservatives of one variety or another. I think now this we finally see the difference between six and five.
That is a great summary. One of the reasons that I'm changing casebooks for the benefit of the audience is that the cases have to change. Everything has to change after 2 years of this. I don't think your full scale update is due for a couple of years with Josh Blackman, Randy Barnett, but I know you will get the supplement out and I'll be able to use the video material you've adopted as well, which is very high tech. Dobbs is obviously number one in the public's mind, but how do you rank the cases that mattered the most in this term?
Oh, well, you know, I haven't had enough time to think about that. I think school choice could end up being the most important case from a policy standpoint, because look what Arizona has done with the law that sends, I guess, $7,000 for every child to wherever they want to go to school.
It's the first backpack bill in the United States. Doug Ducey has really broken the dam on school choice.
Right. And the court has allowed this to happen. Until religious schools were able to participate equally with non-religious schools, the political impetus for school choice was greatly reduced. They did because they it was hard for them to get behind it. And now that they are included on a non-discriminatory basis, which is what the court said had to be. If you have it at all, you can't discriminate on the basis of religion. I think there's a chance that we could break the stranglehold that the teachers unions and other government institutions have over education. Although, you know, there's always a risk to, this is the downside of school choice has always been, when you start sending government money into private institutions, then strings follow the money. And then all of a sudden, all the private institutions get regulated in the way government institutions are. So that's always been a downside of school choice that has to be dealt with. But as a step towards you know, free choice in education, it seems like I still think it's a great step forward.
Well, I think the brace of cases, not only the main voucher case that you just referenced, but also Coach Kennedy kneeling, finally gets it back to where it was intended to be by the framers and the ratifiers of the First Amendment as incorporated on the states by the 14th. It's common sense constitutionalism. You don't establish a religion by having vouchers. Establishing a religion is like Church of England and paying taxes, and free exercise means free exercise. And Coach Kennedy can kneel down at the 50. He's not coercing anybody.
Absolutely. And, you know, there is some reason to think that the Establishment Clause was actually a federalism clause. It basically said that this is something that Congress may not do. And then the question is, did the 14th Amendment adopt a federalism clause and apply it to the states? And I don't think it did any more than it applied the 10th Amendment. I shouldn't say that. That's stronger than I believe. I suspect that it didn't any more than the 10th Amendment gets applied to the states via the before the 14th Amendment, because the Privileges or Immunities Clause of the 14th Amendment that says no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, that protects personal rights. That protects individual rights. It's not clear that the Congress may make no law establishing a religion even is a personal right. I would last thing about that, Senator Jacob Howard, when he introduced the 14th Amendment into the Senate and explained what rights it protected, it said, well, there's a bunch of unenumerated rights, and plus these ones that are in the Constitution. He gave a whole list of what was in the Constitution, but he left the Establishment Clause off his list. If this is true, it just means that we are, in fact, as you say, getting back to where free exercise of religion is what should be doing all the work, not the Establishment Clause.
Constitutionally minded conservatives were celebrating the decisions coming from the high court. But the American family is languishing under record high inflation and gas prices that show no sign of easing. Over the holiday weekend, the president tweeted, and I quote, "My message to the companies running gas stations and setting prices at the pump is simple. This is a time of war and global peril. Bring down the price you are charging at the pump to reflect the cost you're paying for the product, and do it now." Chris DeGaul turned to Daniel Turner of Power the Future from AM 990 The Answer in Philadelphia.
Is this sort of a no-win for energy producers? Either the media shuts them out or they're not doing a great job at pushing back.
I agree with you to a large extent. The industry itself has been terrible at defending itself.
Like, you can do better messaging than that, can't you?
Absolutely, and especially to young people who, even if they have been conditioned to think that they don't like the energy industry, they think oil and gas are evil and bad, not one of them is putting down their damn smartphone, that's for sure, right? And not one of them is giving up on one of the most popular apps among young people are all the food delivery apps. And I've talked to, you know, family members who live in outside of the Philadelphia area, and they say, I find it fascinating that suddenly McDonald's knocks on my door. All of that is possible because of fossil fuels, right? The gaming industry. You know, gaming, here's a little fun tip for your parents who are listening. Video gaming and streaming uses more electricity than any other appliance in your house, minus the air conditioner, right, the refrigerator, all of the rest of them. So tell your 12-year-old son who's like, we need to do something for climate change. Great, kid. Put down Fortnite forever. No more video games for you, and you're doing your part in climate change. But they're not going to do that because they love the lifestyle that fossil fuels has given them, the comfort, the privilege, the access to the economy and the world.
My boys both, each, this is how spoiled rotten they are, each had their own Xbox, and they were each on their own TVs running the things off of Wi-Fi, and we got the electric bill that summer, and you ain't kidding. I mean, it was like we were running a nuclear power plant in our house. That's a great point.
It is. This is the joy of this great American industry, and it is an American industry. Right? We have to remember that it was Rockefeller who figured out that this sludge that comes from the ground, he was the first person to figure out it was worthwhile and do something with, right? And it's pretty remarkable that you can buy a gallon of gas, even as high as it is right now, you can buy a gallon of gas which comes from 5,000, 12,000 feet below ground, thousands of miles away and goes through a rigorous process of refining and transporting, and you can buy it for a third the price of milk. And you should be thanking us. I'm sorry. There's no more of this. Like, you have to defend your industry. You need to be thanking me for this industry, Joe Biden. You fly your private jet home every weekend to Delaware to meet some of the bastard grandkids that you don't want to recognize publicly. Right? It's about time that you thank us for this industry.
All right, maybe that's the reason you don't get the contracts. You probably can't run that ad, but I'm still with you. How about this EPA ruling from the Supreme Court last week? I don't exactly know the implications, other than it basically says without congressional action, you can't have executive branch, you know, administration officials just willy-nilly running roughshod over entire industries. The Congress has to actually pass a law, was basically the crux of it, yes?
It really was. This just threw the responsibility back to Congress to say, look, we can no longer have bureaucrats who say, OK, there's this piece of legislation called the Clean Air Act, and therefore I'm going to shut down your fire plant because that's part of the Clean Air Act. Like, that is not within the purview of EPA. And EPA was created in 1970 as a rule from Congress. So Congress set their guidelines. And we don't want our bureaucrats making up legislation. And if you want proof of that, ask suddenly why last year or 2 years ago you were told you can't go to church on Sunday, or your kids can't go to school, or you have to work from home. And you were like, wait a second, what do you mean I can't go to the grocery store? Nope. Why? Because some nameless, faceless bureaucrat decided that because of COVID, they suddenly found this new power, and now they are calling the shots. We don't want our bureaucrats with unlimited power. Now, if you want to pass a law that says everyone has to work from home when there's a pandemic, then write a law. But you notice no member of Congress, whether the state house or whether on the federal level, no member of Congress ever wants to write said legislation. They don't want their fingerprints on that turd sandwich, right? So they want to use these big bureaucracies to get their will done. So this was a great ruling to say, if you want to pass some sort of new guideline, you have to write it into law. You can't use these huge agencies to do your dirty work because you're afraid. And this was a great win for freedom and a great win for the rule of law.
I'll ask you to finally forecast for us those who produce our energy. The incentive for them to produce more is not there. No. It's costly, it's risky, and they're being bludgeoned by the current powers that be. Do you see this working ultimately? It's clear that this administration's design is to, and they have said it. I mean, Biden has pledged it. Obama before him have pledged it. They want coal and oil bankrupt. They want to break them. Mm-hmm. Will they succeed is my question. Can they rebound with a new administration?
They can rebound with a new administration, but that's going to be 2.5 plus, you know, years before anything changes. So even if, God willing, we have a great president in 2024 who unleashes American energy, it's going to take 2025, 2026 to get in this industry back up to speed. So I don't have great news for the next 4 or 5 years at all. It's going to be tough.
Coming up, a look at the agenda of the hard left.
The left is leveraging everything possible in order to destroy the America that we know and replace it with this neo-communist model.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Hugh this week. Joe Biden was elected president under the assumption that he was going to get America back to normal. He defeated his hard-left opponents Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren as the moderate. But Biden has governed as though he just does not want to get crossways with the AOC wing of the Democratic Party. Monica Crowley served in the Department of the Treasury under President Trump. She joined Joe Piscopo on AM 970 The Answer in New York City.
They know what they're doing. This administration knows what they're doing, and it all came out. The new liberal world order. There it is. Boom. It just came out, Monica. You knew it all along. This is scary stuff, Monica Crowley.
Yeah. You know, Joe, for 8 years under Barack Obama, I used to be all over the media, Fox News, Fox Business Radio, doing all these shows, saying exactly this, which is, when people talk about incompetence, it drives me crazy. Whether it was Obama or Biden now, none of this is incompetence. Yes, Joe Biden is mentally incompetent because he's senile, but everybody around him knows exactly what they're doing. He's a willing puppet in all of this. These people are neo-communists, but they're not stupid. So they are actually executing a very well-designed fundamental transformation of the nation. This is a re-engineering of America. It's being done on all levels, whether it's government, economics, corporate America, the culture. Everywhere you look, the left is leveraging everything possible in order to destroy the America that we know and replace it with this neo-communist model.
So is Joe Biden, I was just talking to Miranda Devine, who wrote Laptop from Hell, as you know, and her, she comes through with all the connections that Joe Biden has with China. And I'm thinking, is he getting, and again, this is going to sound nuts. If you're listening, this is me. This is not Monica. It's not Salem Media. It's Joe asking a question. Because is there like some kind of person in China giving Joe Biden his marching orders? I mean, has it gone down? You know, I hate to be snarky about it. But or conspiratorial about it. But what's the other explanation? Somebody, he's talking to somebody in China saying, Joe, you got to do this, you got to do that. Or is he just got people in there around him that are somehow connected to communist China, Monica?
Well, I'm glad that you had Miranda on. She's a friend and she's just brilliant on exposing all of the compromising aspects of the Biden presidency, because Biden is completely compromised when it comes to China, Russia, Ukraine. They have poured tens of millions of dollars into the Biden family over many years, and they expect something in return for all of that money. So, yes, you are seeing that. But there's something even bigger going on here, Joe, which is it's not just the CCP in China. This is part of a globalist reset, what they actually call the Great Reset, which is not a conspiracy theory. They've actually written books about it called the Great Reset, which you can order on Amazon and find out what it's all about. But this is the CCP in China. This is the World Health Organization, the WHO. This is the World Economic Forum, the WEF. This is like an alphabet soup of neo-communists who are literally trying to re-engineer the world. And of course, the United States is the key to all of this, because if they knock us over and destroy our Constitution, our free market system, then they really do have the world, because we're the last bulwark for economic freedom and individual liberty. So if they knock us over, then it's an easy march across the world to doing what they want. And so when you're saying, is Biden taking orders, he is one of them. He's listening to them because he's one of them. So this is a willing march that Biden is doing, along with his entire team.
The Biden administration may be pushing as hard as they can on their leftist agenda, but the country is pushing back. That's Selena Zito's argument. I talked about her piece in the Washington Examiner earlier this week as I sat in for Hugh.
We are moving in a center-right direction. Selena, is this really a realignment that we're looking at here?
Yeah, you know, this realignment began obviously in 2016. Since then, in 2020, people were paying attention to the big race, the Biden and Trump race. However, if you look down ballot, the country became way more conservative in state house races, state legislative races, Congress. Republicans were supposed to lose 20 seats. They, surprise, won 14 seats. But that also then continued into 2021, not just with, again, the big ticket races of Virginia and Jersey, but also in municipal races all across the country, where row offices in counties all went Republican. Not all, But, you know, there was a giant shift, you know, even in a state like Pennsylvania, where county row offices, and that might not sound sexy or important, but it is. It tells you the direction of the country, and in particular in suburban areas in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, where many analysts thought were lost to the Republicans. The voters came back. You see that with this upcoming wave in this cycle. And what I think is most interesting is these voters moved under enormous pressure. Enormous pressure. What do I mean by that? Our cultural curators in corporations, in the NFL, in Hollywood, in places like Disney, or their neighbors with all the signs of hate has no place here, and, you know, all those and all the protests, they still went conservative despite our culture telling them you're a bigot if you do. And I think that is, you know, a very important thing to pay attention to. Now you look at the Supreme Court, and that is sort of a result of these voters moving to the right. Because, you know, we now have constitutionalists in there who have on prayer, on the Second Amendment, on religious liberty, on life, have moved the country back towards where it rightly belongs, which is center right, which is where the country really is. And I think that is what, you know, we are seeing. I mean, for years, you know, prayer has, and anytime prayer was at a municipal meeting or at a football game, there was a trigger message by the activists that essentially took it out. Now that's gone.
I think you really hit on a key point here, is that the Supreme Court shift to the right really does reflect a realignment that's already been taking place for several years.
Right.
And to your point about certain offices, certain local offices not being sexy, before November 2021, you could have said the same thing about school boards. Part of this realignment is a realignment back to the local, right? And that's one of the reasons why it's a center-right movement. They're trying to get realignment back to the local.
Right, that's exactly right. And you saw this localism, the seeds of this, actually begin in 2009, 2010, and that off-year election and in those midterms. Actually, what the one-off is going to end up being is Joe Biden.
Coming up, after yet another mass shooting, a look at the spiritual state of the nation.
The biggest drop in faith in terms of age groups was a 10% decline in 18 to 29-year-olds who say they believe in God.
Mike Gallagher, when the Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
The fight for the unborn is raging in our country. An unprecedented leak from the Supreme Court indicates that Roe v. Wade is on the brink of being overturned. The debates have never been stronger. The award-winning film, The Matter of Life, cuts through the rhetoric and hatred and exposes the real issues surrounding the plight of the unborn. The Matter of Life. Stream it today at salemnow.com and have your own life transformed as you watch The Matter of Life.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Ed Morrissey. Brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm sure you tracked with this. Last weekend, we had yet another mass shooting, this one outside of Chicago at a 4th of July parade in Highland Park. 8 were killed, more than 30 were injured. 1 2-year-old was left orphaned as both his parents fell victim to the rooftop shooter. Before that, of course, we had the horror at Robb Elementary in Uvalde, Texas. It's no surprise that the conversation turns to gun control, to red flag laws, to waiting periods and the like. But not enough has been said about the state of young adult males today. Simply put, there's a spiritual void. Here's Mike Gallagher.
I want to share with you the results of a survey that just came out that shows how people are leaving the church and turning away from God. Certainly young people are as well. New Gallup poll shows that Americans' faith in God has hit an all-time low. And 4 Christian faith leaders said that a variety of factors, including young people filling their lives with things other than God, and anxiety over coronavirus lockdowns have contributed to this decline. Now, listen to this. As you, and you probably heard this news last week, 81% of Americans, only 81% of Americans right now believe in God. That's a 6-point drop from 2017. It represents the lowest percentage that Gallup has ever recorded. Now, I saw the number and I thought, well, 81% of Americans believe in God. From my perspective, that's pretty good. But the biggest drop in faith in terms of age groups was a 10% decline in 18 to 29-year-olds who say they believe in God. Now, this shooter in the Chicago suburb was 21. These other shooters are young men in this category. The biggest drop in faith in terms of age was a 10% decline in 18 to 29-year-olds. Bart Barber, who's the pastor of First Baptist Church of Farmersville in East Texas and president of the Southern Baptist Convention, told Fox News that more and more people in the U.S. have not only no connection to faith congregation, but also really no time in life to stop and contemplate anything spiritual. Barber said even some of the people who identify themselves as Christians and say they believe in God and have accepted the gospel, for a lot of them, church and contemplation and worship have been squeezed out by the schedule in their lives. Young people are the demographic that Catholic Bishop Robert Barron, the bishop designate of the Diocese of Rochester, worries about the most because they've inherited the attenuation of religious practice that is prevalent in society. Bishop Thomas Bickerton, president of the Council of Bishops of the United Methodist Church, told Fox News Digital that in some ways the poll isn't surprising because churches have lost multiple generations of parishioners by not nurturing young people in the faith. We're missing two or three generations of people who are not steeped in the rhythm or the liturgy of the church, he said. They're not involved in the relationships in the church. They're doing other things. I've talked to a lot of young people, he said, who say, you know, all through this COVID thing, I've come to doubt whether God exists or what my relationship with God is. Bickerton said, you cannot underestimate the power of relationships. I think isolation has bred that sense of doubt. Barber recounted a situation during COVID lockdowns that moved the needle for him when a grandmother in his church urged him to reopen the sanctuary because her son was struggling with depression after losing his father and was in a bad place mentally and emotionally without access to worship. Barber said COVID, when you throw that in, people are even more isolated. People are also removed from church. COVID accelerated these things that were already trends before that. I think that's spot on. I really believe that that's the case. That these lockdowns, that the depression that people are suffering, the anxiety, the fear, and don't underestimate the fear factor. A lot of people are just downright afraid. That contributes to the climate that leads to something like what we saw in Highland Park, Illinois.
Coming up, a closer look at the Saudi-funded Live Golf Tour.
I've called it Saudi blood money. It gets very, very tangled when we've got the President of the United States going to Saudi Arabia, when we've got other sports and other athletes playing in Saudi Arabia and taking their money.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Hugh this week. Phil Mickelson, the veteran golfer, has been a very successful athlete. His career earnings with PGA, not counting sponsors, is over $92 million. But Mickelson has now left the PGA. He's now playing on the LIV Golf Tour. When he signed, he got a handsome bonus of $200 million. Yes, the entire LIV Golf Tour is getting a lot of well-deserved scrutiny. Michelle Tafoya, a veteran sports reporter, now has started a podcast, Sideline Sanity, with Michelle Tafoya. She turned to Christine Brennan of USA Today. Christine explains,
there's a sports side of this, and there's the geopolitical side. And, you know, oh boy, geopolitics, just what we want to talk about in sports. But yeah. But here we are. You know, we deal with what we're given as journalists and as broadcasters, as you well know, and from your long and wonderful career as well. And so first I'll tackle the sports side. And that is the competition, the thrill of going against the best. It's something certainly that, again, you and I have covered, have been so fortunate in our careers to see at the Olympic Games, to see it at the Super Bowl, at college football championship games, college sports in general, women's, men's, Wimbledon, men's, women's. Again, on and on it goes, where you see the best going against the best. PGA Tour, there's no doubt, that's the best competition. They still have, obviously, most of the great golfers. Certainly, as you alluded to, the golfers who are in their prime, as opposed to people like Phil Mickelson or Sergio, who are definitely in the bottom of the eighth, as you said, or maybe what would that be in golf terms, the 13th or 14th hole of their careers. And so competitively, just wanting to go against the best. Key thing, I think, for people who follow golf or maybe don't follow it that much, but understand what a cut is. That means obviously halfway through a tournament, the best golfers move on. The ones who haven't played as well get cut and go home and get nothing from the PGA Tour. Well, at LIV Golf, there's no cut. So, of course, it's just, you know, as you said, kick back and, you know, free money and just enjoy the ride, almost like an exhibition. So and you had people like Rory McIlroy and Jon Rahm speaking eloquently at the U.S. Open last week just about this, about wanting to go against the best, and also the tradition of playing in a tournament that Jack Nicklaus won, Arnold Palmer won, Tom Watson won, you know, just Tiger Woods, of course, has won, that you want to go back to those sites and play those tournaments. That's the PGA Tour's argument, and that's the golfer's argument. And then, and I'll try to keep it to a minimum, but then there's, of course, the issue of the money. And as you know, I've written quite a few columns about this and talked about this also on air. And, it, you know, it's backed by the Saudi Investment Fund. That is funding the LIV Golf Series. And the Saudi Investment Fund is run by MBS, that's Mohammed bin Salman, who human rights organizations, CIA, all, you know, U.S. sources, all of them say that MBS was responsible and ordered the murder and dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi, the Washington Post journalist, in 2018. So there's that. Throw that into the mix. Obviously, I've called it blood money. I've called it Saudi blood money. It gets very, very tangled when we've got the President of the United States going to Saudi Arabia, when we've got other sports and other athletes playing in Saudi Arabia and taking their money. I do see a difference, which we can get into. But being to him and to Dustin Johnson and a few of the others, Americans who'd gone to the LIV series, about basically how dare they? Do they realize what the Saudi involvement in 9/11 was? And the families wrote this letter, went on for several paragraphs. I read a couple sentences back to Phil from that, and he cut me off. That's fine. I've been cut off a lot. You've probably been cut off a lot over asking questions.
Yeah. New York Post, Brian Wacker, reported that the 9/11 families sent you and others a letter alluding, of course, to Osama bin Laden and the 15 of 19 hijackers that the Saudis, of course, sent, and that they say now you are a partner with them, and you appear to be pleased in your business with them. Terry Strada is the person, of course, who wrote this letter, and her husband got on the plane in Boston that flew into the World Trade Center. And they say the deaths of your fellow Americans.
No, I've read all that. Is there a question in there?
Yes, there is.
It wasn't a short question, so I get that. But as someone pointed out to me later, Michelle, I was actually reading the passages of the 9/11 families when he cut me off. So it's me talking, but I am reading the words of 9/11 families.
Yeah.
Take that,
yeah.
You know, take that, you know, for what it's worth. If that bothers you, great. Right. If it doesn't, fine. I was not bothered at all. I'm doing my job. So he goes, I know. I've read it. Is there a question? He didn't say, I know. He said, I've read it. Is there a question in there? And I said, yes, there is. And I said, how would you explain what you've done going to the LIV Golf Series, taking the Saudi money, not to me, not to us, but to them, the 9/11 families? And he proceeded to talk about his empathy and his sympathy to the 9/11 families, but never answered the question of how he would explain himself. And that's okay. He doesn't have to answer any question. But right. I gave him an opportunity, and he did not take it.
I would say to the Strada family, I would say to everyone that has lost loved ones, lost friends in 9/11, that I have deep, deep empathy for them. I can't emphasize that enough. I have the deepest of sympathy and empathy for them.
He passed. Yeah, it's my understanding is that the PGA invited players to have a meeting recently and talked about how can we make this tour somewhere that you want to stay, and how can we avoid this LIV series from plucking a bunch of you away, as we're seeing happen. What can we do to reward you better, make this the place for the best golfers? Because the last thing the PGA wants to do is dissolve and go away, because there's not enough money in the PGA to compete with this LIV series, right?
You're right. Again, going back to the kind of the sports structure of it all, the PGA Tour, you know, this is not good. This is not good for the PGA Tour. And one might have thought they could have foreseen this coming sooner and maybe addressed issues of their players sooner. I do think that, you know, when you look at this, one of the things they're talking about moving forward is a fall series for the players on the PGA Tour where they would be guaranteed money. So you know, kind of like the appearance fee situation, to right. try to answer LIV Golf. It won't be the kind of money that LIV Golf is throwing around, but to keep everyone happy and to show them that there are obviously changes in the works. But there's a civil war going on in golf.
Yeah.
And they've got to come up with some answers. And the PGA Tour is doing its best. But you can't afford to lose too many more of these people before you're screaming at the PGA Tour to do something as well.
Coming up, sports washing.
The Olympics are this bastion of purity and, you know, competition worldwide and coming together and the whole holding hands and all of that in countries where often to the far distance people are getting tortured. It infuriates me.
More of Michelle Tafoya with Christine Brennan in the final segment of Town Hall Review.
Hi, I'm Don Crow. This Week in the Christian Outlook, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. After an incredible term from the Supreme Court that ended Roe, we'll look ahead.
We're going to have to step up our game and really be there for women.
We'll look at the convoluted logic on personhood from abortion advocates.
The anthropology behind the abortion argument basically comes down to this. It is a baby, or it's not a baby, depending on whether it's wanted.
And the broader challenge of rebuilding a biblical, God-centered human sexuality.
He intended men and women to marry and procreate and make families.
And a lesson for the administrative state from the Supreme Court's EPA decision.
You cannot come up with authority that Congress did not give you.
Be sure to join us and visit our website at ChristianOutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I'm Ed Morrissey. Hypocrisy in the world of sport. But the world of sport has perhaps fine-tuned their hypocritical efforts. They've called it sports washing. Here again, Michelle Tafoya with Christine Brennan of USA Today.
All right. Sports washing. I love this term. Go ahead, Christine. Tell us what it means.
It, you know, instead of whitewashing, you know, someone's reputation or image, it's sports washing. It's meaning using sports to help your image, to help people forget the bad things you've done, to cover up. You could even say to bribe people, like bribe an athlete to come and be a part of your business, to go into business, in this case with MBS, and to help him burnish his image, be a part of the PR team to make people say, oh, hey, Phil's doing this. Maybe they're not all bad. Or, you know, Sergio,
right.
I like,
right.
You know,
I love Sergio. So really, this can't be that bad, can it? Because Sergio wouldn't be a part of it if it were something that bad.
Exactly. And of course, Phil said it himself when he had that interview for the book on, you know, that's out now on him, where he said, you know, they're, I don't know, what do we say, terrible, whatever, mean mother blinkers, and they killed Khashoggi, and they, you know, are terrible for gay rights, but I'm going to go into business with them, you know, which of course was quite a comment. And that's what he apologized, continues to apologize for, even though, of course, yeah. Michelle, he went into business with them. So
he went into yeah, business with
so
them.
He described it, I think, pretty well.
So you and I have talked about this, about, you know, some of these authoritarian dictatorship countries like Russia, like China, getting the Olympic Games. Nothing angers me quite like this does, because we all know what's going on in China. There's genocide there. There's slavery there. And yet the Beijing Olympics, la, la, la. Well, this time the ratings reflected that people didn't want any part of this. You know, I think people are starting to understand more and more. The Olympics are this bastion of purity and, you know, competition worldwide and coming together and the whole holding hands and all of that in countries where often to the far distance people are getting tortured. It just it infuriates me.
The only one to host a Summer Olympics and a Winter Olympics ever. Only one. Beijing. How awful is that? That this capital of this reprehensible regime that just so awful. You described it for so many reasons, the human rights abuses, the murders, the atrocities of China. And they get to be the one city and the one country that's hosted both, obviously Beijing in 2008 for the Summer Games and then
right
for the winter. And you know me, I blasted that every which way I could in USA Today, on CNN, on Good Morning America. And I will do that till people take away my last microphone and my last, you know, laptop to write. It was just awful.
Thanks for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. You can learn more about Sideline with Michelle Tafoya at SalemPodcastNetwork.com. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin and producers David Pouchon, Michael Cook, and Tim Gantner. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Hugh Hewitt. Thanks for joining us.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.